Well, it is slightly fortuitous, at least, that Mary got called away on a Sunday where we are asked to read a text that has had huge influence, again, on the course of Western thought. Not always in the best way, as I hope to argue, and of course many of you will sort of anticipate that when we hear the story of Abraham and Isaac that I alluded to last week, well, now we get it full on. This story, one of the central stories of the Old Testament, especially from a Christian point of view, because it has been a foundational piece of Christian theology to use this story of Abraham and Isaac as a prefiguring of the activity of God who would sacrifice his son. You get this prefiguring of Abraham and Isaac, and then you get the theology of a God who sacrifices his own son. And I think we need to look at both of those things, and again, this is going to be somewhat familiar to some of you at least, because it's one of those, as I said earlier, it's one of the kind of theological ditches that I would be willing to die in. This question of the nature of God. And I think that is one of our primary tasks as human beings is to come to an understanding in our own hearts as to what we think our actual situation is. We call the power that gave rise to the universe, we call that power God. Well, what's the nature of God? Is God for us? Is God against us? What's the nature of God? And we might think that this is an ancient question, but just look around the world and see what's now being done in the name of God, and who is killing whom in the name of God, and who's strapping explosives to their body to blow themselves and other people up in the name of God. It's a contemporary question. What's our real situation? What is the nature of the power that brought all of this into being? If there is such a thing, maybe it's, as some people say, maybe it's just random nothingness. I find that preposterous, but nonetheless, the question. So Abraham and Isaac. This is not my own reading, necessarily. About 15 years ago, I began reading some philosophers and theologians that were in the tradition of a Frenchman named René Girard. And what I'm about to say follows fairly closely what Gil Bailey said in his book, Violence Unveiled. And it was one of those things that once I sort of heard this, I went, yes, that's kind of the proverbial scales fall from the eyes. Abraham and Isaac. We almost inescapably hear this story with our modern ears. And what would it mean for any of us to hear a voice telling us to go kill our child? And we all know, we've all read those horrifying stories in the newspaper of people who in fact do hear those voices and do drown their children, kill some way. And we rightly understand that that is a profound disordering and a psychotic break with relational reality. And yet, when we hear this story of Abraham and Isaac, that's about the only context we have for listening to that story of Abraham being tested by God. Social context for understanding the story of Abraham and Isaac is this. It took place at a time in history when human sacrifice was common. And so it's stretching a point a little bit, but not altogether, to say what Abraham was doing is going to church. It's just that church was a little more intense in those days. And he was doing what a pious man did. That's how you showed humility, respect for God, placating, propitiation. I don't pretend to understand all of the impulses, But human sacrifice was common. It was, in a sense, always condemned by Israel. But Israel itself quite frequently reverted to human sacrifice. So you have this story of a man being conventionally pious. I'm going to do what conventional religion asks of me. I'm going to sacrifice my son. And if you think it's odd, remember how the story of the Trojan War begins. What did Agamemnon do? You know, leader of the Greek armies. What did Agamemnon do to ensure the success of this military venture? He sacrificed his daughter. Again, we have to put this story in some kind of context in which Abraham is not your isolated psychotic hearing voices, but he is being conventionally pious. And the significance of the story is almost exactly the opposite of what it has conventionally been understood to be. It is not God sort of isolating Abraham and saying, I'm going to put Abraham to the test. Rather, it is Abraham encountering a conventional religious attitude of his time and then having an epiphany that the God that was calling Israel into being was not a God that required human sacrifice. So that he was tested not by the living God that calls all of us here today, but rather he was tested by the conventional religion of his day, and he transcended it. He came to a new understanding. It is a huge leap forward in religious sensibility to understand that the real God does not ask us and does not need placation by means of human sacrifice. So, and what about the God? I mean, the God who is in the sort of the background of this story, testing Abraham in this way. Again, if you read that with fresh eyes, it's a pretty cruel, vindictive, capricious God. I actually thought, there's a movie I love, Clint Eastwood, called In the Line of Fire. And one of the scenes of the two FBI agents undercover trying to arrest some counterfeiters, Clint Eastwood's partner has been discovered that he's an FBI guy. And they take him below and put a bag over his head, and they're going to kill him. And then the criminal turns to Clint Eastwood and says, well, I'm going to ask you to do it, because I think you're one of them. I think you're with the FBI, too. And so Clint Eastwood gets put to the test. He pulls the trigger, click. He says, now I know you're on the right side. Do we want to really portray God as a petty counterfeiter that wants to put us through the test that way? Again, it's bad theology. And then you look at the way this story has been used, which is as a prefiguring of the sacrifice of Jesus himself. And of course, this has given rise to an entire theology of atonement in which the only reason Jesus was born, and this is a central theological document of the Middle Ages, Anselm of Canterbury, I will tire some of you out by talking about this central document. The only reason Jesus was born was to be sacrificed, and the only reason they needed the Son of God to be sacrificed is because all of us were blemished lambs, like bringing a three-legged lamb to the altar. Not a good sacrifice. None of us could be sacrificed to the God who needed blood sacrifice in order to forgive. So Jesus had to be born in order to satisfy this need of the deity to have blood sacrifice. Again, a really questionable theology. And this sermon is a little off the cuff because I kind of word late, and so I get to say a few things. It reminds me a little bit, the theology of this, always in the background is a God, glowering, vindictive, violent, wanting to punish. The God who needs and is willing to punish. Gandhi's question in the movie pertains, do you want to change people or do you want to punish them? Do you want to change them and bring them to their fullness, or do you want to cut them off and punish them? Now, for my money, Jesus was on the side of change all the time. He wanted to give people back to themselves an understanding of who they were, what they were doing, and saying, listen, don't do what hurts you and other people, and step into a new way of seeing yourself and others that is so wonderful, it's like a banquet, it's like a feast. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid, said Jesus over and over and over again. Well, the theology of a God who would kill his own son and wanted to test Abraham in this way, and of course read a little bit of Job, the beginning of Job, that is not a God who really, you can say, this is who God is, don't be afraid. And again, this may seem a little irreverent, it might be. It has always seemed to me that the church has exploited this vision of God, the violent, punishing God, by sort of interposing itself and saying, listen, God is really angry and really wants to punish you, but we'll take care of it. Because we know God. We know what God wants. So you do what we say, and you give us the money, you know, that we ask for, and we'll make it right with God. Which reminds me, again, of lieutenants of a really powerful mobster going around shaking the people down for protection money. Give us what we want and we'll keep the big guy off you. And this seems so far, far, far away from the teaching of Jesus, who said, don't you understand how infinite is God's love for you and how safe you are? And how you have nothing to be afraid of. Now, that message has in so many ways historically been buried because it does not serve the fallen human interests of our human institutions. It's much easier to control people if they're afraid. And that's part of what got Jesus in so much trouble, is he was saying, well, don't be afraid of the religious authorities. Why do you not judge for yourselves what is right? Because God loves you, and God is within you, and God will open your eyes. Why don't you live in the freedom and the love of that presence? And how we have historically turned it into a message of fear and control is part of our sad human legacy, and we're still, at this late date, trying to work our way out of that and come to an understanding of who God actually is. And stories, you know, Mary Cavalier and I, this is one of the stories that we very deliberately edited out of our Sunday school curriculum. I mean, think what it's like, or remember what it's like to be 6 or 7 years old and hear the story. God told Abraham to go out and kill his son. I don't know. There's a little bit of confusion in there for the 6-year-old heart trying to hear that. And we are still trying to understand what our human situation is on this little planet. Read the newspaper, read the internet. We don't have it figured out yet. And part of it, a central part of it, is what is the nature of the power that brought all of this into being? Is that power for us or against us? And power that wants to exploit always will say, that power, you need protection from that power, and we can provide it. And Jesus said exactly the opposite. Open your heart infinitely with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, because the power that brought this into existence is pure, pure love. And we're still trying to figure out a way to tell that story.